I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Selling smoothies is what I do, but for small business insurance, I chose my State Farm agent. He's a small business owner, too, so he knew how to help me personalize my policies. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to an agent today.
You're listening to the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast with Karen McMahon. We invite you into a journey of healing and personal transformation that will radically change your divorce experience, heal your heart while refining your character, and enable you to be effective and feel empowered as you navigate the practical and emotional challenges of divorce.
Divorce is like a foreign land, filled with unfamiliar rules and jargon, and pressure to make complex decisions that will impact the rest of your life. Don't go it alone. Go to rapidreliefcall.com and get the support and guidance you need.
When your attorney says, hey, maybe you should seek a therapist, or hey, what would be good for you, a divorce coach? They're telling you something that they are seeing in you, which could be improved by you getting these resources in your life. They're not telling you, again, because they want psychiatrists to have more clients. If I send someone to a divorce coach, there's a lot of reasons, but one of them was to help someone get organized, all right, in every aspect of their life, financially, emotionally, with their children, and all of this. But I always say divorce coaches are the middle ground between the psychology and the law, all right? You're not either. You're the person who just helps them with their life efficiency. And so if I'm telling you that, I'm telling you, get organized. You need this help. You need this support, not because I think it's good for them, but because it helps your case.
Stepping into the realm of high conflict divorce can be daunting after years in a dysfunctional marriage that's left you feeling diminished and uncertain. In our High Conflict Divorce Demystified series, we acknowledge the emotional roller coaster you're on, facing self-doubt and fear, especially regarding your children and finances. We're here to provide empathy, education, and guidance as you navigate the maze of legal intricacies and emotional challenges ahead. So let's dive in. Welcome back to another episode of the High Conflict Divorce Demystified. Today, we're talking about best practices in successful high conflict divorces with attorney, New York City attorney, Brett Ward. In the tumultuous journey of high conflict divorce, mastering the art of picking and choosing your battles is not just about preserving your peace. It's a strategic approach to safeguard your finances and your emotional well-being. By learning when to engage your attorney and when to step back, you empower yourself to make informed decisions that are both cost-effective and mentally beneficial. Embracing these practices that we're going to talk about today doesn't just mitigate your immediate stress, it sets the foundation for a more harmonious post-divorce future. So understanding the dynamics of high conflict divorce demands emotional intelligence and strategic foresight. This episode delves into the essential skills of staying emotionally regulated and maintaining a curious stance toward your attorney's advice, fostering a collaborative rather than confrontational relationship with them. And by asking why and understanding the rationale behind legal strategies, you position yourself as an informed and proactive participant in your own legal journey. For best practices, following best practices rather doesn't merely reduce your legal bills, it alleviates the emotional toll of divorce on you and your family, paving the way for resilience and recovery. And so with me today is Brett Ward. He co-chairs Blank Rome's matrimonial and family law practice and is a nationally recognized family law practitioner serving a high-profile client roster that includes celebrities, athletes, politicians, and leaders of global financial institutions. He's known for being a tenacious litigator who has notched many victories against long odds and is an ardent advocate for victims of domestic violence in family court. I'm really excited about this conversation. Welcome, Brett.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me.
You know, we talked about one of the many different angles that we could take on today's conversation, and I love the fact that you have such a depth and breadth of experience us to really look at across your clients, what have been some of the best practices that you've seen with them that have really benefited the whole family and the outcome? You know, I think a great place to start is the kids, because they always end up caught in the middle. And so can you share a little bit about what, and maybe tell a story or two about what you've seen when it comes to how the parents deal with parental time and decision-making?
So I would say that the A number one best sign for any divorce is when I meet either the husband or the wife and their first statement to me is, and they legitimately mean this, my kids are the most important thing. I do not want to put them in the middle of this. My husband, my wife loves the children. They're a good parent. We are going to have a time-sharing arrangement that sometimes they'll say, people go to say numbers, 50-50 time and equal time and use these words. And I really dissuade people from thinking about children as time blocks as opposed to when is it best for them to be with each parent. When they legitimately mean that and say, if you say, oh, well, you sure, more time, more this, and their answer is, I don't care about money. I care about my kids. They love their father. They love me. I want the transitions to go smoothly. I want to sit next to my ex-husband or my ex-wife at their wedding. I want them to always feel comfortable with me so we're not fighting about custody. That is the most refreshing thing. It is the biggest gift that people can give to children. It applies sometimes, even with, you have situations where I'll have mothers come to me and I'll say, what's been the past? Well, he hasn't had that much time, but I'm perfectly okay with that. And there's another piece of this, which when I'm talking to people about custody, there's a little dirty secret about divorce, which is there's a part of it where you get a little about your independence and your life back. When you have a time-sharing arrangement with children, you basically have a free babysitter every other weekend. During the week, if you work, you can stay at work late without feeling terrible that you're not going to be able to see your children. You can go and socialize with friends. You can go away for the weekend. You can go back to the gym or, you know, the salon or whatever really is something that, you know, when you have children, you lose a good part of your independence. And I find it really healthy. I love it when people say, I can't wait to have time to myself. And a lot of people think I'm such a bad parent to even say that. And I tell them it's incredibly healthy. And the truth is, when I have a parent who's a little bit hesitant about giving up time, I say, do me a favor, try it for a weekend. We're not going to have a custody battle after that. And a lot of people say, oh my God, I haven't had a weekend in 12 years to myself.
Exactly. So, yeah, that's such a good point. I think that first weekend or two, there might be that poignant missing. But as soon as you go, wow, I can decompress, I can re-energize, there's such beauty in that. Now, are there times where you have someone who feels that way and they're really willing to, even if the other parent is difficult and demanding, that they're willing to take whatever that less is for the sake of the kids?
Sure. There is those special people. And sometimes I don't think that it's more of someone coming and saying, well, I've been so involved, now I'll be almost absent. That's not really the scenario. But the scenario when you have a working parent, it could be the mother or the father, and they're the more successful, they travel for work, and they're very realistic and say, hey, here's when I can do this time. And you know, mom has, let's say the father is a traveler, mom has raised this child, done a wonderful job. They're dependent, they love her, they're dependent. When I have the time, I'm going to do it. My advice to parents who haven't spent as much time, but come in and say, I want 50% of the time, and I can tell that it's about the dynamic, not the time, I say to them this every single time. If you have 40% of the time with your child instead of 50% of the time, from a psychological perspective, that is completely insignificant. If you take 50% of the time, if you get 50% of the time with your child and only spend 40% of the child time with the child and you're canceling on them, that will be psychologically significant. So you need to focus on what you can do, because it's way better to be there every time than get extra time that you can't be there.
Yeah, beautiful. So it really comes down to a quality over quantity when it comes to your kids. Even if you have them under your roof, but you're so busy on the computer at work, it's like, what does that mean that they're there in your physical space? So that's a great one. I love that one.
I want to add, that's true for intact families.
Yes.
Okay. I don't mean to jump in, but what I want to say is that some people just abandon the rules of intact families because they're getting divorced, where all of a sudden issues that when you were married were never an issue, but when you get divorced, it's a tremendous conflict and problem. You should be looking for quality of time when you're a hardworking parent. You should be looking for quality of time over quantity of time then too.
Yeah. And I think your next point really speaks to that too. So certain people get really caught in the weeds and everything's a fight and everything's a court order. And then they're the people who can see the forest for the trees. Can you just talk about those two? And again, if you have a specific story to tell, I think people always remember things with stories.
Okay. And that's it. There are long-term goals in life, and then there are short-term issues. And the thing about divorce is you want to get through it. You want to not be devastated financially. You want to be not devastated emotionally. We got a short time on this earth. Every day you spend mired in a divorce is one day delayed and getting on with your life, is one day delayed before you can be really happy again. And you have to look at that in the process. And I recently had this case, and I'm going to use fictitious numbers, but my client had a settlement with her husband. And we fought and we fought and we fought. And it was a $5 million settlement. And this was a controlling, abusive husband. And he paid her like $4.97 million and purposely just withheld $30,000. And I called her up and I said, I'm going to file a contempt motion. I'm getting you that money. He's going to have to pay all of my fees. It's a lock. And she said, don't. I said, what do you mean? I'm winning this. This is 100% success rate. It is clear in the agreement. She said, Brett, don't do it. She's like, you got me such a wonderful settlement. I never thought I was going to get this money. I'm ready to move on with my life. The minute you file that in court, he wins. He gets to get me entangled in this mess. And I wanted my freedom. I was paid handsomely for my freedom. Don't. Let him think he won this. I'm the one laughing. And it took me a minute because of the competitive nature and that I don't like people reneging on deals. And I said, that's one of the healthiest thing any client has ever said to me.
That's beautiful. And it's so true. And it's so smart. And it is so forward thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me leave this behind and get on with my life. I have plenty of money. The $30,000 isn't going to make any difference. Perfect. Perfect. Another one that I run into so often is talking to my clients about, they come to me with the he said, she said all the time, but then it's like, did you really send these 12 emails to your attorney and why? And so can we talk about that? I feel like what happens is there is a waste of time and a waste of legal fees. And then oftentimes they get angry at the attorney. Where do all my legal fees go?
Right. And that's something we face all the time. And you know, I think it's really incumbent on an attorney to talk about that in the meeting number one and to say to the person, my skill set is as a lawyer. Okay, that's my lane. I'm good at it. I can help do the analysis and all of that. But, and when I need facts for anything, I'm going to ask you. And certainly anything legal, something comes up with money, something comes up with the children, then you should email me. But probably there shouldn't be more than one or two emails a day where I haven't reached out to you for information. And some people now, which is weird, written communication is communication. All right. There's clients who write me an email with like six parts. And I say, you're going to call me, because what's going to happen is I'm going to respond to this email. You're going to have six more questions. A verbal communication is still should be your preferred methodology of communicating with your attorney, because it should be a discourse, not a questionnaire. And so that's something that you have to think about is every time. And the truth is, some attorneys, every time, instead of like every time they respond to an email, they give you another unit of billing. Instead of saying, well, I think I talked for them for like all my emails were this. Technically, they say, okay, like some people take care of time. I just did that. I'm going to do a, what we call point one, a 6 minute. I come back, I'm doing 100 things. Oh, I just did something else. That's a point one. And like, you know, you could actually be way more conservative with the time with just a phone call. And also, you know, phone call could avoid you needing to spend your day and time. And, oh, I just thought of something else. I just thought of something else. I promise you, when someone calls with one question, most likely I'm going to try to answer every possible question that could be around it. So you don't have to be thinking of me when you're at dinner with your friend. Right. And that is a big part of it. Divorce should not take over your life. It should be an aspect of your life that you have to deal with like any other legal matter. But if you're texting me or emailing me all day, it's a sign of something very unhealthy going on.
And being caught in those weeds again. And I think that's an interesting thing. Like the client who is so caught up in the fight versus the client who's really looking at getting through it and to the other side. One of the things I found over the years is clients who've been in these really power imbalanced relationships where when they hire an attorney who, like you, is assertive, direct, they get really, really scared. They get scared that you're blowing up, you're going to create something, they're going to have all this backlash, which I think makes sense. But can you talk about the downside of trying to pull back on your attorney and just your perspective on what's going on there?
So this is one of the things I always, when I'm taking a step back, even from your question, which is there's a trust factor. If you don't trust your divorce attorney, you have the wrong one. I used this example before. I'm going to use it again. When you go to a doctor and you say, my shoulder hurts, and they said, this is a lower back problem. If you trust them and then you let them treat your lower back, you have that trust. That is going to happen in certain divorce situations. I always say to my clients, I am not the coach of this team. You are, but I'm the quarterback. So you're going to call in a play and I'm going to deliver, but you need to trust that I have the talent to deliver the play you call and how I do that. And sometimes it's you want to be uber aggressive. I'm telling you, calm it down. But sometimes it is me, you saying, try it this way. And I say, I need to wake people up here. Okay. Because there's a power imbalance and I need to make that balance. And every time you say five, they say 10, then you say 10. Well, and then you call me up 3 weeks later and say, why is it 10? And I say, because you said it was. And then sometimes you have to trust your attorney is, let me get it to seven. Let me do what I do to get it to seven. And there's also the dynamic. This is particularly true with victims of domestic violence. Right at the beginning of the case, they are generally afraid. Why? Because the aspect of domestic violence that they've been exposed to has told them that one, your opinion means nothing. Two, if you ever challenge me, I'm the superior person. I will punish you. And this will be worse for you if you ever come after me, divorce me, try to get my money, I'll destroy you. Yeah. So when someone, and if you are told that for so long, no matter how strong a person you are going to be affected. There's a Stockholm syndrome that arises from that. So when I come in and say, I won't let him do that to you, it takes usually about 3 or 4 battles before they believe me. Okay, where I have to tell them, I'm going to protect you here. I'll get you the order of protection. I'm going to get you support. And each way along the way, are you sure we're doing the right thing? Are you sure this isn't just going to upset them? Are you sure this isn't going to somehow backfire on me and they're going to take my kids away from me? Those things happen. And you have to understand that that's not them questioning you. That's the conditioning. And so as a practitioner, you have to understand that and try not to get frustrated. There's a really unhealthy dynamic that I've noticed with victims of domestic violence. They respond much better to harshness than they do to kindness. And so when you want to be effective with them, it's much easier to become harsh. And you have to fight that urge as a practitioner throughout, even though technically you probably could help them more in the legal world by being harsh with them, because it's what they respond well. It's what they respond better to. So, you know, and I think that's where it is. I think, you know, and again, but to your original question, which is you got to trust your attorney. And if you don't, you definitely have the wrong attorney, period, the end, because there's a lot of counterintuitive stuff with respect to finances and custody where you can take not the full position you want to take because the longer term payout is tremendous.
Yeah, that's such an important one, that trust. And especially anyone who's coming out of a high conflict marriage, they've got their trust has been decimated. And here you're really their first relationship after the marriage. And so I would imagine a lot of times you deal with mistrust in the beginning.
Yes.
Yeah. And you build that, and you build that through the kind of conversations you're talking about.
Have you lost yourself in your marriage? Fallen into self-doubt, insecure, and uncertain of your own viewpoints? If you've disappeared behind the shadow of your partner's personality, the Reclaim Your Mind free mini course will help you understand how you got here and the exact steps needed to regain control of your life. Go to jbddivorcesupport.com/reclaimyourmind and get started today.
Since high conflict divorce often involves so many ancillary support people, whether you're getting a custody evaluation or an attorney for the children or something with the finances, can you speak at all to best practices in that area? Are there any red flags or green flags that come to mind? Because I think a lot of our audience is going to find themselves investing in some of those other experts.
I often tell people, if I go to a nice restaurant, right, and I know a little bit about wine, but someone hands me a wine list, I always ask, do you have a sommelier here? And if they say yes, I ask the sommelier to come over and they'll talk to me about some wines. And I said, don't worry, I know about wines. And sometimes they'll ask me, then why did you call me over? And I tell them, because you're the expert in the room. And I'm not. And when you are with an expert and paying money for an expert, and then, you know, in a restaurant, you're paying a premium for the wine, then you listen to the person who's the expert in the room. And that's it. And so if you get a financial expert, ask your questions, make sure they have all the information. But I promise you, those accountants know more about accounting than you if you're not an accountant. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I represent lawyers who like to tell me what to do. And I said, if you can do this better than me, you don't need me here, but I've been doing this over 20 years. You've been doing this for 20 minutes. Who's the expert in the room? And the same thing with mental health professionals. I always say there's two types of people in this world, people who have a therapist and people who need a therapist. Okay. And a lot of people think when they get into these emotional situations, you know, can I have a therapist? Is it going to look bad? And they're going to think I have a diagnosis. And I'm like, everybody in this system believes you should have a therapist. It actually brings judges some form of relief that there's another set of eyes on your emotional well-being. But if that psychiatrist or psychologist prescribes you medication, take it. If that psychologist or psychiatrist says, hey, you got to let go a little bit, you know what? You need to get away for a little while. They're not telling you that because they want to promote the vacation industry. They're seeing something in you with all their expertise that is going to help you in your life. And that's, you know, like I said, wherever I am, if there's an expert, I want to listen to them because they have the wealth of experience. The same way when someone comes into my office, they better listen to me. And I will say without reservation, those clients who listen to me, but really listen to me, whether initially or even with a little coaxing, they always do 100% better than the ones I have to fight all along the way.
Right. And you know, what you said earlier, Brett, about trust, it seems to me that trusting your attorney is foundational because your attorney is usually going to be vetting or recommending those ancillary experts. And so you can trust them as a result. And that's what I'm hearing you say is that they're the experts. Put your trust in them. They're here for a reason. They know what they're doing.
And I want to add something to that. When your attorney says, hey, maybe you should seek a therapist, or hey, what would be good for you, a divorce coach? They're telling you something that they are seeing in you, which could be improved by you getting these resources in your life. They're not telling you again because they want psychiatrists to have more clients. If I send someone to a divorce coach, there's a lot of reasons, but one of them was to help someone get organized, all right, in every aspect of their life, financially, emotionally, with their children, and all of this. Well, I always say divorce coaches are the middle ground between the psychology and the law, all right? You're not either. You're the person who just helps them with their life efficiency. And so if I'm telling you that, I'm telling you, get organized. You need this help. You need this support, not because I think it's good for them, but because it helps your case. You know, there are psychiatrists, psychologists who win custody battles for their patients because the other side will say, this person is bipolar and dangerous. And you have a psychiatrist or a psychologist come in and said, I've been seeing this patient for 2 years. I've never seen anything like this. They present as this, they present as this, they presented this. You think some divorce lawyer, most divorce lawyers are going to do a good cross-examination on that person? It's going to be near impossible. All right. But that what people don't see as much is that I'm telling you this because you will be emotionally better for this process. But I also may be picking up a witness for you that is going to help you down the road tremendously.
And actually, you just made me think of something, because the other piece of it is, I know even with my own divorce, when I wanted to get therapists for the kids, like the message was always, you're the only screwed up person in the family. You're the only one who needs it. And everyone's going to know how screwed up you are. And so when we go back to what are these individuals coming out of a power imbalance where you've been belittled and berated, and if you have bipolar or anxiety or depression, you've been told how you're going to lose the kids because of that or whatever the case may be. And so the thing I would love for you to touch on here is one of my biggest messages to my clients is your attorney does divorce Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. Your soon to be ex doesn't. Don't listen to him or her over your attorney. Can you share a little bit about where that comes into play?
You've been listening to our podcast, Getting Educated, Regulating Your Emotional Reactions, and it's been really helpful. Yet you know you could do better, be better, and you're wanting and needing more support. That's where our coaching service is a game changer. We're here for you when you need us the most, ensuring you have all the tools and resources at your fingertips, guiding and supporting you to be more effective. Our free rapid relief call helps you gain a broader perspective, commit to your best next steps, and determine what coaching support is right for you. Visit rapidreliefcall.com to book your call today.
First of all, the day I start working 9 to 5, I'm going to celebrate because it's much closer to 24/7 than 9 to 5 for me. But those words come out of my mouth constantly. Why do you rely on the person you are divorcing for your legal advice? I probably say that once every 2 weeks. Well, my husband said that he doesn't have to pay support after 10 years. Okay, What law school did your husband go to? How long have they been practicing divorce law? I've been doing this a long time. I work in a nice office. I got a nice view you can see behind me. Why are we listening to him? The person who has every interest in bullying you, scaring you. And that's a hard thing. But again, and that goes right into the coercive control dynamic. Your spouse is kind of the best advocate for you, the best advisor, the person who really you fight the world against together. And you're used to valuing their advice. You're used to having them as the bedrock of how you navigate the world. And that something you detach from is part of the process.
Yeah. Beautiful. I had a question for you and it left me. So I'm going to summarize what we've talked about so far. So number one, top and most important is keep the kids front and center. Make sure that you want to keep them out of the middle and don't get caught in the weeds. Make sure you can see the forest for the trees, see the big picture, see the future. Don't get so caught up in the tit for tat and what's going on now. Be discerning about your attorney's time. Don't share every email or every text. Don't blow all of your retainer on things that have nothing to do with legal strategy and negotiation. Your attorney is not a therapist or a psychologist, so go to the experts for what they do. Your attorney's the legal negotiating individual. Trust your attorney. If you don't trust your attorney, if you walk out and you're like, I'm going to hire him or her because they are just tough as nails and they're a bully and they're going to go up against my bully. Do not do that. Make sure that you trust your attorney. And I would just say, if you've gone through years of feeling like you're not seen and heard, and I can tell the kind of attorney you are, Brad, it's like you come out of that attorney's office and he or she told you a bunch of stories, but you don't feel seen or heard. That's not a good sign. And on the other hand, if they take the time, they explain things multiple times. So make sure that trust is there. And then to your last point, you've got your attorney and your spouse. One of them is the professional and the other is not.
One of them has your interest at heart and one of them does not.
There you go. Yeah. So when we look at best practices, as we begin to wrap up, are there any other key factors that come into play that you want to mention to our listeners?
One thing I like to say is your attorney is not your psychologist and your psychologist is not your attorney. Too often, and your friend is not your attorney. So a lot of people call me and they get used to calling me. And I will tell people I am the highest paid, least qualified psychologist you have. Okay, I know you're sad. I don't have tools to make you not sad. I get time with your kids and I get your money, but I don't figure out how to make you happy if one of those two things doesn't. And you have to know that. I had a client many, many years ago. She was the daughter of a very, very wealthy artist. And she used to call me every Friday night, speak to me for 2 hours, talking about, just tell me I'm a good mother. Tell me I'm a this. And I used to tell her, listen, you're spending this money. Now, the money meant nothing to her. I mean, it was hundreds of millions of dollars. But for most people, that's just not realistic. And it's not helpful to you. That's not my role. And you kind of have to understand that. And I can't tell you how many times people come to me and say, oh, I spoke to my boss. And my boss tells me he makes way more money than me. And he pays way less support. Now, that annoys me to no end, but I have a story now that I tell people every time someone says something like that to me. I had a client. He said his boss makes triple the money and pays way less support. Well, the boss came to me 3 years later, still embroiled in a terrible, awful divorce. And he was paying triple the amount of support. I never got to go back to the first client and said, you were lied to, or you were lying to me. I don't know which. But anytime someone comes and said, my best friend said this, it's the same thing we said before. Listen to the people who have the skills to advise you because of their profession. Don't mix it up. Your mother is not an objective observer of your custodial skills. So don't listen to her. Other than if it makes you feel good or she says nice things, it's good to say. But don't come to me and say, well, my mom thinks I'm the best mother. I'm sure she does. She thinks you're the best everything. That's her job.
Right.
But if I'm telling you, you should probably not do X, Y, or Z. I know this because what it looks in court. And I have to tell you that sometimes my job is figuring out who in this person's life is preventing them from making good decisions. It could be their mother. It could be their father. It could be their new boyfriend. It could be one of their best friends who is whispering in their ear and being a cheerleader, which is great. When you're going through a divorce, I often say, you lose your foundation. It's very, very discombobulating. What your life was, we all go through life. We go to work. We come home. We see our kids. We eat dinner. We go to bed. Maybe we read a book before we go to bed. And we wake up and we do it again. And then you're divorced. The partner's not next to you. Whatever arrangement you had in terms of who takes out the garbage, who does the dishes, now you got to do everything. Your kids aren't with you all the time. You have to worry about money in places you never worried about money. And it really is disorienting. Yeah. All right. And it's so important to have different people in your life to stabilize. Your old friends will be there. So that moment you go out and do something with them, it's like the old time. Your parents are there to help you. But when those people become blind cheerleaders, you should bury him. You should make sure he never sees those kids again. You need in the divorce to be strong enough to say, I appreciate your support. I appreciate what you're saying to me. And again, this is what therapists help with. This is what divorce lawyers help with. This is what divorce coaches help with. They help rebuild that foundation. Now, when you leave divorce, you're going to have a different plot of land. You just are. But the people and the professionals in the near term, while you're getting your feet back under you, can help you with that foundation. But again, use each for the right thing. The divorce lawyer shouldn't get you organized. The psychologist shouldn't be the one to give you divorce advice. And the divorce lawyer shouldn't be giving you psychological treatment.
Yeah. That's so true. And I think that the other thing that I've seen so many times is just because your neighbor or your brother or your friend's divorce looks the same, we both have two kids, we both live in the same neighborhood, like that whole concept that every divorce is so incredibly different. And that's another place where someone's like, yeah, no, we're the same. And yet I have this, that, and the other thing, and you should fight for. And they're different. Every single one of them is so completely different.
Just like every marriage is different, and every divorce and every marriage isn't what it looks like from the outside.
How true is that? Yeah, we don't know what's going on behind closed doors.
Right.
Until we do.
Until we do.
Yeah. So thank you so much. This has been incredibly helpful. And I so appreciate your time, and you have so much experience sharing your wisdom and your guidance with our listeners.
Well, thank you for having me on. It's always a pleasure. And, you know, to have this platform for you to inform other people, it's a real gift.
Thank you. And we'll be back again real soon with another episode of the High Conflict Divorce Demystified. Until then, you take care. Thanks for joining us on the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast. I hope you found guidance and encouragement to help you along your journey. If you like my podcast, please take a minute to subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. You can also visit us at jbddivorcesupport.com, where our team of coaches support both men and women throughout one-on-one coaching, group programs, online courses, and free resources.
Do you love podcasts? Well, I do too. Hey folks, I'm Clint Powell, and I host a number of podcasts, and I want to share a few of them with you. During the Break podcast is my legacy podcast. We talk business, politics, relationships, culture, all with interesting people. Give us a listen at DuringTheBreakPodcast.com. And if you love adventure in the great outdoors, give Dayfire Podcast a listen. I host it with my friend and the founder and former owner of Rock Creek Outfitters, Dawson Wheeler. We talk climbing, hiking, biking, paddling, running, camping, the van life, conservation, and gear, all wrapped in stories of adventure from around the country and from around the world. Find us at DayfirePodcast.com. All of my podcasts can be found on your favorite podcast platform. Oh, and if you like crime podcasts, give thecrimecast.com a listen.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
I know how to run a hair salon. But for small business insurance, I chose my State Farm agent. She's a small business owner too, so she knew how to help me personalize my policies. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to an agent today.